CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons. A special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Welcome to the fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Bates. Joining me today in studio, Chris Ronan.
Hello.
How's it going, sir?
Going pretty well.
It's been a... It's funny because we're pre-recording this, not because of anything else but a scheduling and things like that. Because, like, we are... It is already fucking getting hot again. And I hate it.
I hate it.
How do you... Like, again, because I'm from the north and I know you're originally from Midwest. Like, how do you handle it? Do you handle it at all? Because I don't handle this at all.
It's weird. So I've had like a bit of a curve. So I adjusted pretty well to the heat originally because I have not had the funds for adequate air conditioning for most of my time in Austin.
Okay.
So I've gotten used to a wide range of temperature acceptability. So I used to joke between 60 and 80 degrees is fine. that was before. Other people that I live with aren't as welcoming as the high temperatures, and so the air conditioning goes on a little bit more than I would prefer sometimes.
That's okay.
And so, I'm used to living in...
Well, because you did the smart way, because, like, I never got used to the heat as long as I've lived here in Texas in general, and I've lived in Texas for a while now, and I still have not gotten used to the heat. But you did it the smarter way, I think, because, like, the way I understand it, and this is what my dad told me, because, I mean, he's a doctor, specifically a pediatrician, actually neonatal, so even better. I think it's that you develop your sweat glands as a kid,
mm-hmm.
and depending on what, like, region of the world you're in, you know, you develop more or less. You know, obviously, growing up the north, while it did get hot and humid in Michigan, there was a good chunk of time where, you know... It was also, you know, a few degrees below that and with at least feet of snow, you know.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon. Whereas in Texas, it's sort of an uncommon thing to happen and everything else. And so it's sort of funny.
I mean, we would get hot days in Philly, and it would be like 90 degrees with some humidity. And those were always like, those were nice days, but they were hot. But besides that, though, like, Texas heat is easy. Just get to the shade. Get to the shade because it's... You know, as hot as it is, it's only hot in the sun. It's not like a humid heat where it finds you everywhere. There will be you find a shadow on one side, it'll be 100 degrees. The other side, it'll be like a cool 70.
Yeah,
and survivable. So
yeah, and I should also point out, if you're wondering why, that this is pre-recorded, we're actually doing this not only A, just for scheduling, but B, we're actually testing a new device out, and actually because of this, and this is the first time I should mention this, because I didn't mention in the pre-show, but we're testing out a new piece of hardware to record this.
Guinea pigs, all of you.
Yeah, my phone is actually in airplane mode, and it's like my most paranoid moment of always putting my phone in airplane mode, but like it's one of those things, like I'm always paranoid about battery life, and this is like one of the most draining things with battery life and stuff. But going back to like the heat, like, I mean, it's such a weird thing. Like, I've never gotten used to it, but I think that's like your strategy of like just sucking it up for a couple.
I've also worked in hot places where heat sources are common, and so that also has kind of I'm used to. I can survive.
What is the hottest job you've worked in?
Hottest job? I mean, they're all basically all, you know, restaurant jobs.
Okay.
Now, thankfully, the place where I work now does not have a grill, but every place that I've worked before has had a grill in it. So, you know, no matter how hot it is, I'm working at least over, you know, a heat source for most of the time. And we've had days when, you know, air conditioning has broken and the show must go on.
That's...
Yes.
Oh, man. I don't... Like, I think the hottest thing I've worked, the hardest job I've worked was actually in a, I'd worked at a manufacturing plant. I worked in their IT staff. And every so often, we would have to go to the line and kind of fix computers and stuff like that. And it was boiling hot. And one point in time, because the company is kind of cool like this, mm-hmm. and I think it's a cool concept because it kind of puts everything in perspective. Every at least once one day a year, you have to work the line. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to work the manufacturing part, you know, assembling vanities. Everyone has to do it. And it was really kind of eye-opening for me as a guy that's been so like, oh, used to being in AC and so used to being in this. And never having to do that kind of stuff, being in that kind of line situation, just like the amount of heat like gets there. Not because it's – I mean, there's fans going and it's a warehouse, but like I think it's impossible to really cool down a warehouse.
Well, because it's just such a big open space.
Yeah.
And you have all, there are so many moving things and all. But I do have to amend my previous answer because my brother actually briefly had a landscaping business that I helped
him
with.
That was
we worked out in the heat no matter what.
No, and landscaping is hardcore.
Mowing high school lawns.
Oh no.
Yes.
Like we talking like football fields? Are we talking like
Not necessarily the football fields, but like more just like for.
I mean, even then, like just thinking of like my high school.
Even worse, in inner city high school, he had I don't know if this can actually make the air or not. But anyway, he had done work for inner city school. He had a contract.
Yeah,
for
just keep it as general as possible.
Yeah, and so but anyway, he would mow the lawns, but like because of inner city, there's lots of little hills, lots of little fenced in areas, lots of little. It's not like long flat stretches of grass.
No, but I mean, because there is just you know, I mean, if it's inner city, you know, surrounding it is the rest of the obviously the joke is the rest of the city, and so you have this sort of patched off area of green where the kids can play or like you know
lots of
activities
of,
can happen.
Lots of hills and zigzagging, but you're in the heat. And
that's. Well, that's worse because that's like city heat. And city heat is an entirely – I think that's what it is. I think it's like – because Michigan still got hot and humid, much like, you know, that. But because like the way – you know, I mean, like, concrete really doesn't absorb heat that well. Mm-hmm. It does a great job of reflecting heat. And if you go downtown like now, like, oh, it could be like 80 or 90 at the most. But it because of everything reflecting light-wise, it becomes like 100 and something. And it's like – I think that's where it is for me is when going downtown in the heat is just like I can't stand it.
Yeah.
So
I mean let's talk about Nerdshit instead though. Let's how about this week?
Well, this is funny because like today we're recording this actually on a Monday, specifically the day that just got done. It's funny because
this is Geek Week.
You're right. That's the best way to explain it because I forget, like I honestly remember that E3 was happening. I forgot WWDC
always,
was happening.
Every year they the same time every year. Since they moved E3 back, which was years and years ago.
Yeah.
To the summer, WWDC has almost always been the same day as E3 has been going on.
I forgot about the fact that was the case because it was such a weird thing. I knew that E3 was kicking off soon. I was like, oh yeah, D3, and then I go, oh wait, that's right, it's also WWDC. And so I'm like, you know, like today has been sort of looking over every bit of news, and not only that, but like yesterday, you know, day zero, which I love the concept of day zero. It's my favorite concept.
Day zero.
Well, because it's becoming now way more important to announce before announce. If day one was today, the 13th was like the official first day of E3. Yesterday, Sunday, when Bethesda and EA had their press conferences, it was day zero. And I always love the idea of day zero being a concept.
Which was even funnier because even Xbox, I think Microsoft used to be the day zero because they used to have the unofficial E3 conference the day before it originally started. So they've actually moved the day zero back a day, I think.
But you know, speaking of Microsoft, actually, it does bring something that I'm curious about, just because of that. Did you get a chance to look over all the Microsoft news?
I've been trickling things in. So I watched WWDC today because I thought that would be the more interesting thing. Actually, it wasn't. It was kind of boring.
There's some interesting thing. There's some interesting things. It's not a whole. I haven't had a chance to really look over.
There was no wow today. There was a lot of little technical geeky stuff, which is in total are awesome and cool. But I'm looking for like the Flash.
Well, because I think right now, like, and this is sort of what happens, and it's weird to talk about this, but right now, iOS and macOS, which is like I said, the new version of OS, the new name for it will be the next version of OS 10, but it'll be the new name for the Apple computer OS and, lineup.
Yeah, and they've gone long enough since OS Classic; they don't need to differentiate anymore.
Right?
They can just call it macOS.
But we're at a point now where a lot of their products, and maybe this is why we're not getting so much wow things anymore. And the thing is, not because I don't think there mm-hmm. couldn't be, there probably is, but I don't think it's going to be – like, I think the next wow thing out of Apple is not going to be in any of their current product lineup.
You're not going to see – and I've given up hope. You're not going to see anything from Apple or Android anytime soon that is going to be crazy because – The space for mobile computing is mature.
Right, that's what I'm trying to say.
And unfortunately, they're moving where I didn't want them to go, which is they're kind of being a subset. They're kind of chasing along the footsteps of desktop PC with a kind of different UI. I was looking for more gestural based stuff to come out of that, and they swerve more towards the
I think that's going to have a chance, just not quite.
Not because
there couldn't be. I think right now the big concern, and I think that that's what's going to eventually promote your gestural thing, mm-hmm. is the big thing with these suckers. And we talked about it right, even just like briefly in our little explanation of how this has been recorded.
Yeah.
That you know battery life on these things are still kind of precious and still kind of. Not improved yet. And if you think about the idea of gestural based, because even something like Siri, you know, I mean, Siri's not done on the phone itself, but there is a data packet sent somewhere.
And you're talking about the higher level, but I mean, if you wind the clock back to like when iOS, especially when the iPad first came out, there was a lot of experimentation as far as what this meant. We have a canvas now that we can manipulate, and there were a lot more widgety things that were kind of more, they were more based on, you could say skeuomorphic or whatever,
right.
But they were more out there. They didn't look like desktop apps. They looked like more like toys and widgets and things that, you know, were made for multi-touch and direct manipulation. Everything now has kind of went, they look more like a desktop app. They have panes, they have toolbars, and while that's probably, you know, is more business friendly and it actually has more of the, I don't know, apps that people will pay for. That's not bringing anyone new into computing. I don't think so.
Maybe. Right. I mean, I think actually what was interesting, and I need to.
It's not enabling that much that wasn't available to the desktop computer aside from some mobile applications.
I hear you saying. I will say, like, again, the thing that I found interesting, and I still have the parts over WDC, so all this stuff is just sort of very tertiary glancing kind of stuff. But, like, the one thing I want to look into is what the heck Swift Playground is going to be about. Because that looks really, like, in terms of, like, quick how to learn programming, I think that's
kind of
cool.
It's actually kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
It's actually in the Apple sense, because there was a very loud outcry, especially early days of, iPad especially, because there was no, Apple had, like, you can't do development on the iPad, you can't do code on the iPad,
right.
You can't run VMs on the iPad. That was, and a lot of the big things, this was going to be a big, great teaching tool, but, like, if you can't teach code, what the hell are you teaching? And there have been some things, like, there's, like, Scratch, there are some little, like, widgety build-a-code things that are half-baked. This is actually, you can actually code Swift.
Okay.
That's what
I thought, and that was always the biggest critique against the iPad, is that, and it's always been my biggest critique against it, is that it's not really a content creation device. It's a content consumption device, which isn't bad. I think it does a great device. But what I like about this thing, the Swift Playground idea, and again, I got to look over all the details, is if this is your first sort of introduction into programming and your first introduction into coding for any kind of platform, and keep in mind, of course, that Swift isn't just a programming language for iOS. It also works for macOS. It works for all the Apple products.
And you can compile it for Linux, too.
Right. Oh, you can? Okay, shit. Even better.
They released the libraries for Linux. I think they also... I mean, there's nothing keeping you from
port. Yeah, I think it's an open kind of service.
It is fully open and documented.
But the idea being that you can transfer this knowledge over to something else and then... You know, go to a more robust compiler. But if this is your first sort of introduction into programming, your first introduction into this, out of all the things, I think is the most interesting thing.
I have been lamenting very much like the demise of BASIC.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, so we followed like a real weird curve with computers. So when you first got a computer, computers did nothing.
Yep.
So the thing you had to include with every computer was a BASIC interpreter so you could actually do stuff with it.
Yeah.
So knowing how to program a computer was essential part of owning a computer back in the day.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, as that's gone away, that's become less essential. Like, C is great to learn and is essential if you want to learn code the cool stuff, but you can't get up and running with it very quickly.
C is... If you're, it's funny because I have many friends who ask who want to learn how to program, who are either starting to learn how to program, whatever, and they're like, you know, what should I start off with? Should I start off with C? Should I start with, like, a look? Pick a scripting language, Python, yes. Ruby, you know, fucking,
and,
you know, your choice, and, you know, and have at it, because it's the funny thing about programming, and this is why I like Swift a lot. Is a lot of times programming is less about the is actually I think less about the language and more about learning the basic concepts. Like
the languages don't matter,
right.
And my main criticism and problem with most of, like, because I've tried tutorials for JavaScript for C and stuff like that, and they start way too elementary.
Yeah.
They start, here's how you do the syntax stuff. That stuff doesn't matter because it's not about the syntax or stuff. You're not going to code something from the ground up and assign variables. You need to learn the libraries. There are libraries that are in use that have entire chunks of code that you're not gonna that you're calling to. You're not writing the code from the ground up. You need to call to those libraries and you need to know what's in use.
Yeah.
And so before you can even get started writing anything that is useful, like, there's a whole world of knowledge you have to learn. What makes the Swift thing pretty cool is it's not quite back to basic where you can write 10 lines and have it run and have it be useful, but they have enough of the libraries there where it's like, here's an environment. You can write some simple code and execute it, and you will execute something against this thing. And if you want to go deeper, you can.
Right. And that's sort of the why I usually promote scripting languages for that reason, because it's instantaneous. But you're absolutely right in the idea that a lot of it isn't that. It's more learning the basics of, okay, how does a for loop work? What the hell is a for loop?
Yeah.
How do while loops work? What is an if then statement, you know, or, you know, all this sort of stuff. Like, what are these, you know, if we talk about any programming language, whether it be C, whether it be Ruby, whether it be Python, whether it be Go, whatever language all these things kind of are in those languages.
And in my mind, programming is more important than coding. And that's the big problem is that I think they keep talking about learning to code. Learning to code is only the thing that facilitates learning to program, which is...
Yeah.
Building the Rube Goldberg, and a lot of people don't have that Rube Goldberg thinking of, here's this thing, I have a goal and I have a starting point. How do I attach these things end to end to reach my goal so that it's automated, so I don't have to do these steps manually?
Right.
And there's not a lot of thinking around my like phrase that I like is like, if you do anything manually twice, you screwed up. Because if it's something that can be automated and you're doing it over and over again, you're missing something.
Yeah, I mean, and for me, it's. I think it's important to definitely learn libraries like that. But I also do think it's important to understand, at least on the basic level, what the hell's going on. And I don't necessarily mean that you have to necessarily know all the inner workings. Like, a lot of people, you know, love like the Rails framework, or people have people when they talk about Ruby, they think of Ruby on Rails, and no, Rails is actually a framework within the language of Ruby. And a lot of people love it because it just makes things magical and they just work. And they just work because they tend to follow convention. They do a lot of actually really crazy metacode and sort of crazy upper level concepts that we won't even talk about. The idea of like having code that generates code, it's insane.
Which is where things should be going, because at the end of the day, if you want everybody to be doing programming, which everybody should be doing. Programmatic things.
Right.
They shouldn't be writing C code, but they should be doing things programmatically and setting up timers. And we do small things like this every time, but setting up alarms. But the simple thing is like, you know, you set triggers so that your day just does things automatically.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're starting to get now, you know, at a very, very basic level before all this happened. I mean, egg timers and freaking, you know, you powered your Christmas lights on. My mother always is like, can you program the Christmas lights? I go, yeah, sure. Every time I go home for Christmas, my mom's like, could you set these back up again? Like, oh, sure.
Yeah.
Just because they weren't set up correctly when I was gone, and I joke and make sure they're working. Mm-hmm. But even on that level, we're getting now to the point, and even like my parents' house is kind of getting there where we're starting to have a lot of things automated and things kind of trigger based on different things happening. You have things like Nest that can trigger, you know, based on, well, it's this time and typically this happens when you're here, or you know, it can even then take a, well, you tweeted out something to say cool the damn thing down, and I took that tweet and I said, okay, I'm gonna cool the damn thing down. And again, that's a very you know, niche case, but that's becoming more and more the thing. You know, like, we're becoming more and more where these devices are able to talk to each other.
And when you and then that's the problem, now we have a lot of them. being able to understand that pipeline is even more critical. So, like, I mean, I go back and forth with my mom because unfortunately she's now stranded now that since I've been out in Texas. Like, I try to do some tech support stuff, but, you know, so I've cleaned up my stuff long ago as far as making sure my contacts are in place, making sure I have little triggers and pipelines for all my stuff so that every time I move to a computer, it's like effortless. I turn on these
switches,
everything gets pulled over. Where my mom, even with the same computer, it's like, oh, something triggered, something this, and without being able to understand the process of where things are going, and it's a very abstract process.
Yeah.
Which is and probably too abstract for most people, but like there's. I get mad every time I see someone, even on Facebook, and it's been less, but like, oh, I lost my phone. Send me your contacts. I'm like, you have a space phone that I have contacts from 2000 from when I got my first PDA. I even had a wrong phone number that I had fixed that I had gotten back because I actually used that backup to populate my iPhone contacts years later. I have not lost a contact in years. And so I get mad. It's like, you have $600 phones.
It's funny
and you're losing a contact.
It's funny that I'm trying to think the last time. I honestly don't remember the last time I lost my contacts. And not because of iCloud.
Shout out to Tay Allen.
No, and not because of iCloud, not because of any of the iOS functionality. But I think since I had one of my Nokia phones, and I learned that you could put contacts on the SIM card.
Yeah,
it's like 20 or something. Yeah, it was like the 20 or 100. It was a good chunk. It was enough where I'm like, oh, I could just do this way. And the thing is, like, I had to teach my dad how to do it because this is where it got really funny. For some reason, and I don't remember if he had an iPhone at the time or if he had it, but for some reason, let me tell you something. You know, it's funny we talk about tech and whatnot. Out of all the sectors of tech, which do you think is the slowest to move to cool things?
Probably there. I know for like medical and military.
Well, the slowest to move to cool things.
And restaurants.
The slowest to move to cool things out of all the tech I've had experience. And this is, you know, yes, my dad's a doctor and this happens, is luxury car radios.
Oh, yeah.
it's so funny. And my dad had an older BMW because he liked the fact it was a standard shift, but it had a garbage radio interface, and every other luxury car I've either ridden in or whatever, they've all had garbage interfaces.
Have you looked at the head units at Best Buy that have CarPlay and stuff? They're still horrible. they have touch screens, and so at least the baseline is raised up to kind of acceptable because now you have Android or whatever on it, but they're still horrible.
Because I remember the tech. Like, I remember when I'd gotten, like...
The screens are washed out. They have, a weird little give to them.
Yeah, they're all garbage. They all are in one way or another garbage. I got to use Tesla, and I've heard Tesla's, phenomenal, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they've all been garbage. And the thing is, my dad, at the point, he'd had an iPhone, and it had Bluetooth, I think. But for some reason, it wouldn't get his contacts. And so you could transfer the contacts to the BMW... But they had to be on the SIM card. It was some weird fucked up process.
I have a doozy for you. So my mom bought a Hyundai Elantra. Elantra is their mid-range premium one. So it's like Accent and then it's Elantra. And one of the big things is that it had a USB port for your iPod, made for iPod. Yes. I don't know if it was officially made for iPod, but that was the advertisement.
My Prius has one.
It has a USB port.
Doesn't work that well, but
no,
it has one.
It gets better. It has a USB port and it has an aux input.
Of course.
So I'm like, oh, those are both actually kind of rare for the time. So I'm like, okay, I had gotten my mom a iPod mini or micro. I don't even remember anymore. iPod Nano. And so she could listen to her songs. I'm like, oh, I guess what? You can listen to this in the car because you have a USB port in there. So I think Hyundai was trying to sell a $30 cable that had both USB and the aux in it on one thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I have cables for $5. I'm going to plug
in. Yeah, exactly. Why spend the, you know, so why buy a specialized cable? No need for a specialized cable.
No. The specialized cable had nothing to do. It didn't do anything, but... So I plugged the iPod in. Okay. It read everything.
Yep.
Except two problems. One, it had like the little LCD screen. Didn't show the meta tag data. Yep. Yep. Showed the goddamn file names.
Yep.
The file names.
Yep. Yeah, this sounds very familiar to my, you know, and you break, like, I don't even want to know what year, like, my 2010 Prius, like, it has iPod hookup. It has USB, but it has the exact same issue.
It gets one better. It wasn't doing it as a pass-through. It wasn't doing it as a pass-through audio with USB. It was reading the data from the iPod,
right.
And it did not decode AAC.
Wow, that's even worse.
It would only play the MP3 files. So all the songs that my mom bought, she's like, I have all these songs that I bought that I can play in my car.
Yep, nope.
Didn't see one of them.
Nope, not at all. That's why, like, I was like, oh, well, thankfully you should the aux cable at least. Here's a patch cable. How do I play it now? Sorry, mom, you're gonna have to hit just play.
And then for icing on the cake, I think she eventually got her first iPhone, and it worked with the 30 pin, but it couldn't charge and do it like it put into some kind of a weird mode that it wouldn't work with.
That's what happened with my Prius, is that it works with certain ones, but after a certain point, the iPhone's gotten a little too techy. I mean, thankfully, it's, you know, my Prius has, you know, Bluetooth audio, so at least that's helpful. But yeah, like, cars are probably the most garbage of
which
interfaces.
Which is why they think, you know, they, like, there's always a joke, it's like, the tech companies can't come into this space, but, like, everyone's eyeing the car space because, like, it's ripe. It's like, ripe for,
it's like the tech companies can't come to space because they have to make deals with these like, cause the funny thing is, like, when CarPlay got announced, like, they had a whole bunch of, like, we're partners, and Toyota's like, yeah, we partners. Ah, no, forget that. We're gonna team up with these other guys. And it's just like, are you serious?
Nobody wants your car stereo interface. It sucks on every level.
Yeah, nobody. And that's that was the one thing I've learned, is that nobody wants the, and again, and even the fucking, like, and I say luxury cars, and luxury cars are, like, the worst, because, like, I think at one point, like, either one of our friends had the Mercedes-Benz has this, like, weird dial interface that you can kind of, like, joystick, right? It's fucking garbage. And the thing is that, like, I see people who drive the cars, and they're intuitively trying to touch the screen. Because they're so used to a goddamn touchscreen in every other device. My mother has rented a car before, and I'll see her trying to touch the screen. It's like, why is that working? Just, I go, because it's a garbage interface. You have to use this bullshit dial.
Exactly.
Thing, Mom.
Everything's just going to look like it's defective for that reason.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
But it's funny. The only reason I even bring it up is because, like, you know, I think that's like the, you know, there's a lot of last frontiers, I think, for stuff for Apple to kind of come into. And Android to come into, but they're not phone. It's not phone anymore. It's not even desktop PC.
That's way covered. Yeah.
You know, who knows? Maybe an AR device or something. But different. I mean that in all honesty.
And to swerve back, I don't even know if we had much time. But it's like
we got plenty of time. Still.
But honestly, VR. My eyes on VR right now.
Well, that's why I want to kind of loop back to E3 finally, because we actually had a lot of announcements as of yesterday. Not from EA. Mm-hmm. We had two keynotes yesterday. EA, of course, did their keynote as of this recording, and Bethesda did their keynote. And Bethesda announced, which is making me really think how I'm going to upgrade this video card for, because I'm actually going to get one of the newer GTX, like, 1070s or 1080s for this card, for this computer here, because I still have the CPU to do it. But they announced yesterday, probably, I think, the thing for VR that's going to capture me to buy a Vive or save up for Vive or whatever, and that is Fallout VR. Because
now,
let me tell you, if I could be anywhere, I want to be in the wasteland.
Well, now have you tried it yet? Have you tried anything?
I haven't tried. I've tried. The only VR I've tried I think it was still Project Morpheus at the time, but PlayStation VR.
Oh, you did?
I tried that out at Fantastic Arcade, and it was actually, like, it was the weirdest thing for me, and I think this is where I started getting into, like, understanding what VR was. And the game wasn't necessarily a super complex game. It was, like, I think it was, like, Super Hypercube was the name of the game.
Yeah.
Sort of this, like, 3D kind of thing. What was interesting for me wasn't that I was using a controller to play the game, because I was like, okay, I use a controller. But because the game required me to kind of duck and look at things at different angles, that I intuitively started ducking and looking at different angles, like getting lower to get a different look on something. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? You know, like, and it became like that. And when I left the game, and this was the surreal part for me, because I was, it was at Fantastic Arcade. We took the headset off. I walked away. I was kind of in this weird daze of like, I'm in the real world again, and the real world felt different.
I've had not quite the same experience, but so I try. I have a Google Cardboard.
Right.
I actually have a ViewMaster now. I upgraded to the fancy one. They're giving out Google Cardboards actually for as like a promotion for Las Vegas actually at South by this year. And so I'm like, oh, I'm getting on this train.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
And it was nice. It was a nice little like intro to VR, VR Lite, because it still has all the screen door effects, but Google has their Cardboard demo, and you can get that basically, oh, I'm somewhere else kind of a thing. You see whales and stuff. That was cool. You know, you put the goggles, the glasses on, it's like you're stepping into a new, different world. And that was even, you know, decent on the Cardboard. I tried the Vive a couple days ago.
I haven't yet tried the Vive. That one I've heard is mind-blowing.
Now, because the Vive has the ones.
Yeah, the one-to-one tracking.
And they do the hand tracking, and they do the spatial tracking.
Yeah.
And what's funny is, when you see VR demos, it's like, oh, you're swimming with the whales? Fuck that shit. That stuff is boring. I don't care about that. I'm in a different world stuff. Once we got into the tilt brush, and I could move around, I was drawing in 3D, and I was tracking my hands. Or there's another one called Space Pirates, where I was shooting
things. Yeah.
So I've been playing. You know, I played first person shooters. I played games.
Right.
So I know how things work. I have, you know, you build your habits for how you do games. And even though the headset on, even though it's 3D. You know, it's still a game. Everything looks like a game.
Right.
There's not that, like, you don't lose reality. It's like, I'm playing a game, but it's a very good game. It's a very 3D game. But once I started moving and I started actually, like, aiming down the crosshairs of the gun that didn't exist in my hand, and I started ducking and using a shield, that's when it starts to, like, make sense. Like, you are using motions that you couldn't make a button for. There's no button for this.
That's what it sort of kind of made. I mean, I've used the Vive, and I've heard that. I've always heard the same thing for the Vive, that kind of experience. But that's what happened with Andy's Morpheus, when I started ducking around and looking at an object that wasn't there, a screen that wasn't there, this little cube floating in space, and I'm looking around at different angles of this little object to find out what the size thing. And it forces you to do that in the game. Mechanic is that way. But because it's tracking at least my head motion and my, like, where I am in somewhat spatialness, not as much as the Vive does, of course, but because I was doing that just with the basic camera, it's like, this is – it clicked for me what VR was the idea of doing things that you're not normally doing. It did do some one-to-one tracking, though, with the controller. But again, that doesn't mean – like, the Vive's entirely a different story, and that's the one I have yet to try, just because I haven't. I think we both have a mutual. I think the mutual friend we're talking about that has it. I haven't had a chance to try it out, just because I do want to, but I've heard that is probably the craziest part, is a one to one. It's the idea that you can put the headset on. They could say, "Here's a controller," and you see a sword. It's like, okay, click.
And you don't realize, and it's scary at first. It's like they can, because you see the controller and it's in your, and you just reach out and you grab it, and it's like it's
there.
And at the same time, you're not there. It's like, even though the weirdest part was, I actually tried at the Microsoft store, and the guy had like a little audio feed, and he's talking to me. And even though I know he's literally like right there, 2 feet, he could have been on another planet for all I knew.
Right.
It's like, I'm in here. He's way out there.
Yeah.
But what excites me about VR the most is it forces experiments. You could bring the old stuff in, but it forces you to experiment and reconsider things. And I don't know. It feels like the early days of PC.
Oh no, we are definitely Gen 1 stuff, which is great.
But in terms of the way the games are being thought about, it's kind of like new frontier stuff. I'm seeing lots of experimentation. Have you seen any playthroughs of either Job Simulator or Aperture Labs?
Oh yeah, I've seen plenty. Achievement Hunter, for those who are curious, Achievement Hunter actually does this. They have a show they call VR the Champions, which is an amazing name. But they'll play a lot of the demos. They've showed a lot of the Job Simulator stuff. What I'm amazed about Job Simulator, and I think this is what the coolest thing, and props to that dev team, is that if I want to know if anyone's figured out something that they haven't coded in.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure there's plenty, but there's like, but it's a game.
That's such a hard thing to do because like people have like, well, what if I copy myself? What if I put my hand there?
It's a game. It's a toy. It's also kind of sandboxy. There are goals in it, but you're not supposed to. It's not like,
but you don't have to do them.
Games have gotten in the trap of trying to be movies too much.
Yeah.
Recently, and everything's very narrative. And what happens is when you're paying for all this artwork, you don't want it to not be seen or be buried in like Easter eggs.
Yeah.
But where I think, you know, I'm seeing, you know, there's more of that stuff. Again, this is a very limited sample set, but between the Aperture Labs, they're more toy-like, and toys kind of want you to kind of poke around
and play with
them. And I like that stuff more because that's where you see more, you know.
Well, what's interesting about VR? You bring up the idea of kind of experimentation. This is I forgot where I read the story or who I heard the story from, but the dev team for Among the Sleep,
mm-hmm.
You know, the baby crawling, you know, FPS kind of weird horror game. They were going to port it over to Oculus, I think. And they thought, oh, this would be easy. We'll just, you know, render out it, you know, put it there. What they learned was that, and this is the weird part about VR that you don't think about, but, and this is either some, and I also heard this from another developer too at Fantastic Arcade, but you can't in VR, and in a very, I mean, you can't, for example, like if you think about like you're talking about cinematic stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes typically the camera may say, look at that, you know, and focus you over on the side thing. You can't do that with VR, because of mainly because this was the interesting part is that because you yourself are the view camera and you have all this kind of control. Yeah, you can't do freaky like there was one VR game apparently that one of the guys was playing, right? It was a horror game.
Yeah.
And I guess the bad guy had snapped his character's neck and spun it around.
Yes.
And it's like, you can't do that because he's like, he had to like yank it off like, no.
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 You can't, the thing is you can't hard cut.
Yeah.
But you can do soft cut. You can do little like blurs in and out. That's kind of something that looks up. But what's cool, the thing is, so we go from movies, but what's also cool is that we get to reach into other tricks because if you want to talk about directing attention, they've been doing that in theater for years. And so what's interesting is VR is closer to theater than to movies.
Yeah, I would agree with
and
that.
A lot of the things that you use to set up theater like play better to that environment than do the movie.
I would agree for sure because it's that you have a lot more agency within a VR experience than you do necessarily with a PC. Not because you haven't always had agency, but because of the way that you can kind of do things in cutscenes in a traditional game versus VR.
And the difference, like I'm sure you've been to like a couple like small stage plays or local community theaters. It's a different experience because like you're there among it and you are part of the performance.
Yes,
even in a passive manner, you are. It's different than when you're like when you watch something on TV. That window changes something that you are not like. Even though there's more realism in it. There's a detachment because you're looking at through that window and you don't quite grasp the world. When you're at a when you're in a play, even though nothing is in front of you, and even though more things are imagined and abstracted,
that's what I'm trying to say.
You're actually more immersed in that moment because people are in front of you. The action is happening. Things are actually engaging all your senses.
Well, because depending on how the play is done, sometimes you know, like I always remember, and I've always kind of regret that I've never seen this live. But if you think of like Phantom of the Opera, you know, one of the famous scenes in that play when it's done in Canada is the chandelier falling, you know, right into the audience. You can't do that in any live sense.
So here's the best argument I've seen for the VR environment. Was in the Aperture Labs demo when they're doing the robot repair. So. If you think, well, why couldn't you do this?
Explain for those who have not seen this.
So Aperture Labs is a set of demonstration VR games made by Valve, and one of them is Robot Repair, where you repair one of the two. You repair Atlas from
Atlas or Peabody.
From
I think it's
Portal.
Atlas, though,
Atlas.
Yeah, okay.
But what's neat is there's a little intro point where it's like, oh, there's a set of drawers over there in the corner, and so get you acclimated to the whole thing of like grabbing and pulling and pushing. But what's neat is there's three drawers, and it's like, and the joke is, spoiling it for you, you know, oh, please open a drawer, and it goes, and please open the correct drawer. You open drawer number two, and please not open the correct drawer, and you get like a little pop up drawer, and it's a whole gag. What's neat is that it's always the third drawer you open.
Right.
It's always, so you're combining that real world interaction with impossibility of code.
Right.
That so you can set up a joke that, like, so it's like, oh, what if I open the drawer? It doesn't matter. The drawer is always the same drawer. It's always the third drawer you open with it, no matter which order you open it in. So that's why you would want code in a physical space, because you can create physical impossibilities, you know, in comparison to if you were to do that in like a real space or something.
Well,
like
even then, it's interesting, because a lot of, like, and this is something that I don't quite think people have thought about, but like right now, and I remember, you know, a lot of people when it comes to VR have now, especially Google Cardboard, people have set up the video, you know, to have like the 360 camera thing, whatever. Which I'm on the fence on, because I like the idea, but I like the idea of like a 360 video. I think it's cool. I'm on the fence of it, because a lot of times, and I remember this was one with a mutual friend of ours discovered VR that I never really – I did the whole thing with Brian and Jury, Justin and things like that. The thing that bothered me, and I don't know if it was just me, but it was like – it had these like – you know, it felt like a traditional video media. Like it cut.
Yeah.
But – which is not bad for a video, but it was weird being like this sort of 360 environment, kind of be able to stir around and like cut to other environment. Like, no, keep me on this camera over here. This is where I want to be. I don't want to be on that camera anymore.
So here's the thing. Everything is new.
Right.
All this stuff is brand new.
Exactly.
And people have to relearn everything. And so
that's what I'm trying to
say. And we have the unfortunate, so think about it. Think how long movies have been along.
Yeah.
Think how long television has been along. Most of the writing that's been taught and the writing styles and the story structure has been geared toward a linear story that people have grown up with movies and television.
Yeah.
And not so much an interactive story or an immersive kind of thing. So people haven't learned how to even script for that. And even, you know,
yeah.
Like, so you have to teach people game mechanics, and you have to teach people, you know,
that's
older,
yeah.
older, you know, these are things that people know. These are, they're like not lost to time, but you know, it's more magic, more magician tricks.
Yeah.
And more of
I
those
think,
kind
yeah,
of,
I think you're absolutely right. You know, cause a lot of
more Walt Disney yeah. kind of things.
Well,
you're
definitely right. In the idea that it's going to require a different set of skills than we've traditionally done. Even on the video game side, you know, it's not just simply make a first person shooter game, first person game, whatever. It's like, yeah, but no, because a lot of it is, there's a lot of different things. Like they're showing off, there in VR, the Champions. I think the game was this, outsourced, the name of the game or something like that, where like your entire business has been outsourced to robots, but you have to like kind of sneak around and like spy, like kill them or whatever. It's some weird game, but it's, you know, there's this like weird warping mechanic and so that's, I think it's gonna be interesting to see how things are done. And again, the thing that really excites me the most, like out of all this, and it seems like it excites you as well, that this is Gen 1.
Yes.
That this is like the first generation of it.
And it's, you know, we're on the cusp. And what's
right, also, we're only like glancing at the surface of this whole thing. I think that's what really, because again, not like that's what excited me when I first saw that, when I saw Project Morpheus, and I was telling one of the guys who was working the game, I go, dude, the thing that excites me now has nothing to do with this. This is cool. But the fact that this is Gen 1, and the guy like, oh, yes, that's, I was like, hey, he was like, yep, it's going to get better and better. I was like, that's what excites me, is that we're finally at fucking Gen 1.
And what's even great is really just about the technology and the cost, because the cool thing about VR, and the reason that Oculus was able to do so much, is that all this research was done in the 90s, as far as there's science behind it. And John Carmack. now, and you know it's serious when John Carmack gets on board, because he's
how long have we been promised VR? Like, do you remember the, and maybe
I was, my first direct experience with VR was, the Philadelphia has a science museum called the Franklin Institute,
okay,
which is actually amazing because it's very interactive and stuff. And they had a VR demo there. And it was low poly. This is 90s.
Of course.
95, I think. And they had like a primitive kind of a like motion thing and all. And you could see like a blocky pointing hand and stuff and all. And they're talking about it, and it just kind of went away.
Well, because like VR to me was always anytime I ever thought of virtual reality, I put this in quotation marks. And I don't even know the game, and I don't even think it matters what the game is, because every one of these places had one of them. But it was always that, like, go to the corner, and there are the 8 mech warriors you can fight in. And it's like this weird mech game that you got into this like weird pod of some sort, and like you're immersed in the game. Every fucking, like, you know, like, you know, main event or or laser tag or where the fuck you want to go had this like just bullshit thing that wasn't really VR, but it was like the closest we ever got. And then yeah, you always see, you know.
And unfortunately, that, like the requirements are just very high, and it's like, yeah. But everything comes from the last thing. The reason that VR is happening now is because smartphones happened. If smartphones didn't happen, you would not have VR because we have a market focus that allowed for small, thin, portable LCD screens.
That's that.
And low power stuff. Yeah. That's the only way that you can make a headset that is you know.
Well, that's why you see why you have HTC and Samsung and all these different companies. Not because they're making VR, because VR the funny thing about virtual reality. If we take the Vive, like the biggest newest part of the tech for the Vive is the lighthouses and the one-to-one tracking.
Yeah.
Because in the end of the day, we've had, you know, like you mentioned, Google Cardboard, you know, the idea of just like your phone right up front of you. We've had small screens already existing there, and we're able to do this. And most of the actual horsepower for VR, is why it requires a really beefy video card, a really beefy computer, is your computer is doing all the work.
It's even compared to like, so you think it's easy, but like you don't realize how much your head moves.
Yeah.
So when you're doing like a first person shooter, like you're in a regular mouse and PC setup, you're moving on a very specific track of path. You're rotating around three axes, and your camera is actually mostly pretty stable, and it's not shifting, it's not tilting side to side. When you have something like Google Cardboard, they just allowed for YouTube. On iOS, you can now watch videos in Google Cardboard. What's amazing is like you can see like your head shakes a lot. There's lots of little judder because your head makes all kinds of little micro motions, and viewer has to track that, has to render that at 90 frames a second.
The hardest part right now, and the new tech that'll happen in VR, and this is where you'll have lower power. You know, this is like if we're talking about VR, the next version, if you will, is going to be FOV support, field of view support. The idea that like head tracking, the idea of where, because right now with VR, you essentially render the damn thing. You technically render it three times if you want to be technical. Mm-hmm. You have your main screen output if you want to have that to capture whatever. You then have both eyes rendered twice, and they're all and you know both eyes are at least at 90 hertz, I think, or 90 frames per second.
Yeah, 90 is the minimum.
90 is the minimum. So. You know, you do all that math. I mean, that's a lot of things. Because again, like you mentioned, you know, micro head trance and whatever. But because it doesn't know where you're looking, like with a computer, you can kind of cheat it. You're like, oh, okay, well, the computer mouse is pointing this way. I can field of view that way. And you can do a little bit of that. But because you have to kind of have a lot of things, you know, a lot of things in the viewport. And again, because your eye can see a little, you know, you can kind of do things.
And your eyes notice things fast. If things are not right.
That's your eye notices a lot. I bet you this is what would cause it. Things it notices are tearing, which is typically when if you've ever unlocked your frame rate on a computer or whatever, and you see that weird like jaggy line, that's what we call screen tearing, because basically it's just the frame rate's higher than the actual TV you can refresh, or B, lower frame rate and that kind of flicker and those are things that you can't, you know, if you take away, if you like, if for example, if you're playing VR and your screen started flickering. You're not only no longer immersed, but I've heard B that some people get sick, and actually that's
very very, very sick. And it's actually and I haven't actually looked into it, but like VR sickness apparently it stays with you because it desyncs something in your mind.
Yeah, so it's very and it's like it is what causes a lot of like the motion sickness and stuff like that. And so you're doing a lot of power for this. So ultimately. All that's handled by the computer, and that's why it's been, you know, why you need a beefy card, beefy all the stuff, everything else. But we're now coming to the point where, okay, so you take that in the thing. All a VR headset is, as of right now, and there's a couple other tech too as well, but the main core of it, and this is where your point really comes to mind, is it's just two really high quality LCD screens in there.
Yeah, it's and, display and motion tracking.
Yeah, and so because of that, you know. All that's already been in these little, you know, your Vives and whatnot. So, you know, if you wonder why it's so expensive, is because I know no one's ever bought, you know, I think it's rare for here in the States. It's not so rare for Europe and other places that people buy phones at full cost. You usually buy them on contract. They get like $200 and whatever. If you were to buy your, like my iPhone, like off contract's like $1,000.
And the other thing I like about VR it is going to create a new spec race,
yeah,
which we have been in need of, because everything's kind of plateaued out, and people thought, you know, when they announced the Xbox One and PS4, like, oh, these are going to be 10-year consoles. They won't update
because
you know what, 720p, 4K, they look the same to me, but VR matters, and so that's why you have the PlayStation 4.5,
yep,
and the Project
Spectre, something like that,
whatever.
Because that one, and that's the one thing we didn't get a chance to talk about. We're almost out of time, but I might as well bring it up because I'm curious on your opinion on this one as a.
They are reactions to VR, but
right.
and even you see video cards are kind of coming back.
Yep.
They're all for VR, and VR is going to drive a new spec race that we've been needing. even phones.
Yep.
Google announced their next gen VR project that's not Google Cardboard. I can't remember the name. It was their whatever Daydream. It's called Daydream.
Yeah.
But you know, even again. Phones had kind of plateaued because what do you need more powerful phones for? Because you want a VR screen in your pocket now,
the ability to power the ability to power another screen like an AR. Like, because I think like real world, like I think VR is good for gaming, and I think good for this. I think the real world thing that's going to be the next one is going to be AR.
Funny thing is though, AR is lower power, but it's actually harder.
Right, because you have to
it to work, you have to do object recognition, you have to
yep.
do all kinds of advanced computing.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is you can do it in AR in VR first,
right.
In a controlled environment when you control the variables, and then you can do with a lot of the problem solving in VR.
And
be ready for
AR.
Because
a lot of the hard part for AR right now, and this is where you know where VR doesn't have that, but again, we're going to figure it out. Is field of view stuff. You know, if you think about AR, when I say field of view, meaning that, like, I have glasses on right now.
Yes.
You know, for them, I can look this way, I can look that way.
You're talking about the focus and convergence problem, right?
Right. Where well, the idea that my AR world could end right, you know, at this, you know, because the display is only yay big on the AR thing, and you can see where the edges are.
Yes.
And I think that's where, you know, when we get to the point where those edges are gone, And an AR thing is as seamless as, you know, that I look at an object and it says, oh, that restaurant is this, Yelp rating this, whatever the fuck.
Honestly, the optical part is the easiest part of the whole thing. The hardest part is really like so when you're in a code world,
right?
Like when you're in, and this is where things get interesting with the VR part, right? So like interacting with objects is easier in VR. Not just from a person perspective, but from a coding perspective, than it is in like a game world. Because if you're doing things with the controller, you have to come up with actions for every button and how to do options, and then you need to tell whatever that thing is how to do the thing, how to grab the object or whatever.
Right.
If you're in a code world, everything has been objectified, so where it's like it's just a thing in Z space.
Right.
If I'm just matching my hand to Z space, I can do all kinds of complex actions with
that thing
you couldn't program.
Right.
But the thing is. The game world still knows that this is a ball. There's object ball. It's of a class of thing like that. To then do that stuff to objects in the real world, not to give them context like that, you need to do that for every object, for everything that you care about. Like, it's harder to project that onto the real world things than it is to just code to use them with things that are already coded in a fictitious world. You know, so that's actually the harder part of AR. Not so much the tracking things, but actually knowing what things are and giving the context.
Even the idea of geospatial. You know, I'd almost think like part of that is also the idea of knowing where things are in the world, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then like say for example, let's like, and this is something a very obscure thing. Let's say I make a cube here, you know, in my room in AR space.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to back away, let's say 10 feet, that cube doesn't get bigger. It doesn't say that same size. It has to shrink. It has to mm-hmm. be kind of that. So a lot of it is understanding, you know, and again, you're absolutely right. The idea that you can control this in a VR world and kind of figure out all the things and how mm-hmm. to kind of keep it that way. But then know how to keep that, you know, that specific object sort of mm-hmm. buoyed, if you will, to a geospatial point in that. And we're getting pretty good at that. We're not quite, you know, we're not quite at the one-to-one tracking it needs to be, but I think, that's again all that things excite me is that we're on Gen 1 problems.
Yeah,
we're at the beginnings of these things.
And by the way, you can thank Microsoft, you can thank Nintendo, you can thank so you know. Funny enough, it's because of the Virtual Boy and because of the Wii, Wiimotes, and because of the Kinect, like. All of the research that got us to this point is because of those things. As much as they suck, people are like, motion controls, they were the things that kind of got.
Because they were like Gen Point 5.
Yeah, and that was a problem. Unfortunately, with VR, you can't do half of it, because half of it, it's like I'm you know you're swinging a thing and you're not actually inside. But once you cross that line, it works.
Yeah.
But the reason that we have all this knowledge of, you know, how to do motion control is because we had those failures first.
Yeah, exactly. Chris, always a pleasure to have you on the show, talking about this, especially now, and especially with all the cool E3 and tech and everything else.
It is
else.
Exciting time. Right
it's always
now.
Fun talking tech with you. Where can people find you online these days, Chris?
Twitter. I'm Chris Ferno on Twitter. Just go there. I hang out there a lot. So.
Go for it. Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404 there on the Twitters. If you want to catch previous episodes of this podcast, you can head to our website, CosmicRadioTV.com/8BitLife. There you'll find links to show notes, our Twitter account, which is at 8BitLifePod. And of course, after you've done that, after you bought your HTC, you know, your Vive and had fun with your VR world, if you're like, you know what, I got $5 left over, head over to patreon.com/8BitLife and help this show become bigger, better, and more awesome. Who knows? Maybe one day we'll be broadcasting in VR. So that's it for today. Tune in next time. We talk to another geek about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people.
All right, take care.
This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.